Howdy folks, this is Shane. Welcome to the In the Blues Tone podcast for May 15th, 2016. Can't believe it's almost mid-year already. It's my birthday in June and time is absolutely flying this year. I gotta say, it's been one of the fastest years yet. Started out a little slow, but I can't believe we're almost at June already. It's crazy. So with that in mind, if you are watching this on YouTube, you can listen to the entire podcast over at inthebluespodcast.com. That's where the entire thing's hosted. I tend to only put short segments on YouTube just for discussion purposes. So if you are wondering why some of these clips are short, head over there and you can check it out. You can also download it for free on iTunes or any podcatcher. Just search for In the Blues on there as well. So the first thing that came to mind for today is the Klon Centaur. I was searching eBay recently and I was just like totally dumbfounded why the Klon Centaur is so expensive even now. There's so many great options to that pedal in terms of tone and build quality, and I'm not saying that the tone of the original is not good or the build quality is not good. They're obviously very well built, but let's just go through some of the prices here and I'll give you a heads up on what's happening. So I'm on eBay in the US right now. This first one that comes up is $1,850. That's coming out of Texas. The next one's $1,699.99. Wow. The next one's $1,900. And you actually get the free cardboard box with it as well, the original cardboard box. That's where the tone comes from. The next one's $2,450. Man, it's number 1,307 of the Klons built. So it's obviously a relatively early one there. But yeah, you know, it all comes down to why are these so expensive? It's obviously not now due to scarcity. I thought that's maybe how the prices have driven up. But I have a feeling it's down to like voodoo and hype. And it's funny because Bill Lee, designer of the Klon, on his new KTR, which is still available, he says, you know, the hype is not of his doing or something like that. I got one of those pedals and they sound great and they're available. So it begs the question of what justifies selling an overdrive pedal for $2,500 or even $1,900. It's so expensive. Now, there's lots of them on eBay too. It's not like there's only one or two and they only pop up maybe once or twice a year. I reckon I could almost search eBay any day of the week and find one of these up. Whether or not they sell is another thing. So I have a feeling maybe this comes down to, you know, hype and some of the professionals who people aspire to play like or people in the industry that look up to other players obviously mention they've got a Klon or they might see them on their board and all of a sudden, you know, we want to get one because our favorite players are using them. But I got to say, they're crazy expensive. So let me know if you think the price of the Klon is justified in today's market. So, you know, whether or not you can spend $1,400, $1,500 US, which is like already $2,000 here in Australia. That's so bad due to the exchange rate. So let me know what you think if, you know, you can justify the price of Klons. And they're not even scarce. They're available easily. If you want a Klon Centaur and you've got the bucks, you could buy one any day of the week. So, you know, is it seriously worth it? Let me know. So this next topic is like opening up a can of worms and I expect some mixed feedback. This is just based on my experience over the years and I thought I'd share this with you and you could leave your comments if you are watching on YouTube. So printed circuit boards versus hand-wired when it comes to amplifiers. Now, hand-wired amps are generally easier to fix, but they're a lot more expensive to start with. Now, my actual question is, does the price justify the difference in the tone? And is the hand-wired equivalent always a better sound than the PCB equivalent? And I have to say it's not. I've had a chance to test numerous amps that were copies of Fender amps that I owned that were PCB built. And to be honest, the PCB amps have always sounded better. I don't know if they're just more consistent in the way that they're built. I'd assume that would be part of it. But I found them to be louder and just more round and full sounding. Was there something wrong with the other amps that I tested? Possibly. I had two or three at one time, and we put them up against the Fender equivalents, and the Fender was louder. It absolutely was, and I had two sets of ears with me when we did the test. They still sounded nice on their own. It was only up until we had a chance to do the comparison that I felt like the actual PCB one was better. And I ended up, at that time, I was in the market for a Super Reverb, and I wanted one that sounded great and was built well. I tested out a few clones that were made here locally, and then I tested out the actual Super Reverb, and it was a no-brainer. The Super Reverb just killed it, and it was like $2,000 less. So for me, I spent like $1,400 on a Super Reverb. I got an exceptionally great deal at the time, and it was a no-brainer. That may have influenced my thought, you know, back then, but at the same time, listening back to the demos that I shot, I got to say, the Super Reverb, the Fender Super Reverb PCB sounds great. Now, I've owned hand-wired amps as well, and a lot of my friends have owned them as well, and we've had a chance to test them, you know, at gigs and also see how reliable they are as well. Now, one thing to point out is not all the hand-wired amps are reliable. They're just not. It just comes down to luck of the draw with transformers. Some transformers can fail. Some might be better quality than others, but they can still fail. You know, I've seen very expensive hand-wired Fender amps fail. I've also seen PCB amps fail as well. So I don't think it goes one way or the other. I just think in terms of reliability, I think that the hand-wired ones would be easier to fix if something went wrong. In terms of tone, use your ears and best judgment. Just because something says hand-wired doesn't mean it's going to sound better than the actual PCB equivalent if they do have one. So I'm a big advocate for just testing things out, using your ears, and then justifying if there's a huge difference in tone. Is it just down to speakers? Maybe one's got a different speaker than the other, or is it something else going on? So let me know your thoughts on this. It's not to badmouth or ridicule anyone who buys hand-wired amps. I've bought hand-wired amps, but for me, PCB amps are fine. They're reliable, they work great. So let me know your thoughts. All right, this next question goes out to everyone who is interested in producing their own YouTube content and making pedal demos. I always get asked, how do you make your videos? What gear do you use? All that kind of stuff. So I thought I'd, you know, briefly explain some of it. It's a pretty loaded question. There's lots of stuff to take into consideration, and it's a bit of a learning curve as well. You know, talking on camera is a learning curve. I couldn't do it at one point. I was just kind of nervous and weird on my videos. If you get back to like 2008, when I first really started doing videos, I was like really awkward on camera. Hopefully I'm not as awkward these days. I'm sort of used to it now. I'm used to seeing my, you know, my ugly mug on camera and coming back in the LCD screen. So it comes down to, you know, if you're talking on camera, it comes down to knowing what you're talking about and having a format that works for you. You probably notice on a lot of my videos, I tend to say pretty much the same thing at the start and end of every video, just with the minus of, you know, or the adding of the information relating to that particular product. That's because it's easy for me to say and I can deliver it consistently. It might not be the most creative, but it works for me. So find an approach in front of the camera that works for you if you do want to talk. Now, in terms of the actual gear, all that kind of stuff, the most important thing you can do is buy a proper light, a continuous lighting kit from eBay or wherever. You want to get at least one or two proper, you know, lights that will light up your room, subject matter, all that kind of stuff. It's the most important thing. When I first started doing these demos, I did them in my bedroom. There was junk all behind me. I didn't have any lights or lamps, and it was horrible to look at, but it's all I could do. So start somewhere and then compare your videos to other people's. But if you really want to get into it, spend the 70, 50, 70 bucks, whatever it is, and buy a really cool lamp. And I've got one, you know, behind the camera facing this wall right now, just lighting this up a little bit better than what it would be if I was to turn them off. So lighting's a huge part of it. Now, in terms of sound, what I've found over the years is there's a million different ways to record sound. Some of my favorite demos that I've done tone-wise sounded best with the camera mics back further from the amp. Now, obviously, I record either into my Two Notes Torpedo Live or I mic up the amp with one or two mics. I've tried isolation recording cabinets, all of these other things. The two notes is the easiest way to get a great tone and consistent tone every time. It just absolutely is. But you do need to spend a lot of money on something like that. Then you need studio monitors and so forth. So my suggestion is start with a camera that, you know, has 1080p resolution. I don't care what brand it is. And try the mics that are on there. If you, you know, most modern cameras have like an audio level compensation thing. So if it detects a really loud input signal, it will then drop it to a point where it's not clipping. And that can be a benefit for recording amps. There is a slight trade-off. If you start to talk right after the volume input's dropped, your voice will sort of be lost and then it will gradually come back up. But, you know, that's just one of those things. Start like that. Just start with a camera, some lighting, and you can take it from there. Now, I edit all of my videos. I edit out all the bad stuff that I play, all the mistakes. When I'm trying to talk, things don't come out properly, all that kind of stuff. So I take all of that out. A lot of guys will just do a live demo, basically with a camera, like what I'm doing right now with this podcast. And they'll just go for it and hope for the best. Now, that's fine too. I used to do videos that way, but I found for me, cutting out all the ums and ahs and, you know, if I stuff up playing, I don't want that on YouTube. So all that kind of stuff I take out. Editing's a whole other thing that you've got to learn about. If you're on a PC, you'll probably want to use Sony Vegas. That tends to be what a lot of guys on PC will use, and that's what I used for years. I'm over to Final Cut Pro X now on the Mac, and I'm absolutely loving it. So the demos that I'm doing these days, I'm using green screen for just about everything. I think it looks a lot better than it did. It actually makes my video camera look better in terms of production, even though I used to use that brown background all the time, and I didn't realize it at the time, but it made the camera look a little fuzzy. Not fuzzy, but maybe not as sharp as what it does now that I'm using the green screen. The green screen just is fantastic. You can put any background behind you, all that kind of stuff. But you don't have to do any of this stuff. It's just, you know, I don't have many options. It's either a white wall, a brown background, or a green screen, which I can mess with. So now that the Mac is making things easy for me, I'm opting for high production value. So yeah, audio should be some of the best on YouTube, if not the best. And now I absolutely believe the video presentation on the new videos that I've been doing is second to none. And I'm not boasting, but that's, you know, the kind of quality. I'm always trying to take things to the next level. And that was on my mind the last few months. How can I make my videos better? How can I make them look better? I tried the green screen just for something to do, and I was like, this is fantastic. But it was killing me. I couldn't do it on my PC. It just wouldn't really handle all that editing and all that kind of stuff. So I ended up splurging on a Mac, which is part of the reason I went back to this job I'm doing now. And yeah, I've never looked back. It has been awesome. So if you're not sort of like technically minded, you might just opt for doing demos with a camera in a room where you can just hit pause and record, upload it to your computer and upload it to YouTube and keep the editing to a minimum. But I honestly believe that the best stuff that I learned, I was lucky in a way. What I should say is this, there's a YouTube user north of 50 now who really helped me. He's a photographer and he really helped me sort of position things better, like lighting. He just gave me some guidance on how to light better and how to make things look better in my videos. You know, if they're overexposed, all of that kind of stuff. With the podcast, I don't really light the room properly. I just chuck a lamp on and I'm good to go. But when I do my demos now, I make sure that the lighting's really consistent and the color of the camera, you know, what the color of the camera's picking up is actually what's in the room. So, yeah, there's lots of things you'll learn along the way. And, you know, as people subscribe to your channel, they'll give you some feedback. I give other YouTubers feedback. I say, well, you could do this with your video software, editing software to make things look better. You know, adjust the levels, not the brightness and contrast. Do things like that to make things look better. You know, maybe make part of the video shorter or longer. You know, there's things that you'll learn along the way, and it's trial and error, but just get started with it. If you've been thinking about it for a while, don't put it off. I think it's really opened up a lot of doors for me, both in terms of gear and, you know, just everything that's happened since I've started doing YouTube videos. I can't believe it. It's insane. So yeah, get into it, enjoy it, make sure it's fun. If you're not enjoying it, don't do it, because it's a lot of work. People think, oh yeah, I can slap together a... What I get a lot is actually, oh, that should be me doing really well on YouTube. Okay, but you've never tried doing any videos. You don't own any of the gear. You know, there's lots of reasons why you're not doing it on YouTube. So if you want to be, if you want to get into it, go for it. There's a guy that I'm going to shout out to, Agufish. He's new on YouTube and he's killing it. His production quality is way better than any of the bigger YouTube channels, say in the 20 to 50,000 subscriber range already. He's got 500 subscribers. I'll put a link in the cards to his channel. You can check it out. I don't know him. I've just been chatting to him a little bit on the live streams via text, and his videos are fantastic and he's just getting into it. So he's come in with obviously a creative background, which will help. And yeah, if you're new to doing it, it's just a learning curve and you just got to persist with it. It'd be like, you know, learning anything new for the first time, like learning how to drive a car. You've just got to give it a go and see where you're at and learn as you go. So yeah, but the most important thing, get a decent camera with a couple of mics that are built into it and that have auto, you know, volume limiting. And I would also suggest just buying a lamp or a light. I've seen so many guys with good cameras and bad lighting. It's a waste of time. Why buy a good camera if the if your subject or yourself isn't lit properly? Yeah, and the talking on camera will come. That's one of those things that just takes time. But I hope that answers a few questions. If you do have any questions about producing YouTube videos, please let me know and I'll get back to you as soon as I can. All right, this next topic should be a little bit insightful for just about every guitar player on the planet. And it comes down to tone and when or when not to listen to other people when they criticize or compliment your tone. Now, compliments are good. Let's start there. I don't think it really matters if someone's a musician or not and they say, man, your guitar sounds great. If you're already happy with it, that's all the justification that you need is, what are you hearing? I always suggest too taking a few steps away from your amplifier in terms of being in front of it. Take a few steps out. Make sure that the high end's in check and everything is good that way. And if you're happy with that, that's fine. I also take on a lot of feedback from guys I respect musically as well. I think that's a huge thing. If they say, oh, your tone's a little bit this or that, I'll tend to take that on board, but I know, you know, in my heart or in my mind or whatever, if I was still enjoying it, then that's justification enough for me too to say, well, I'll take that on board. Maybe I could use a little bit more top end or a little less, but I, you know, it's pretty much there. But that's their interpretation of how my tone should sound. And then generally these other people that you listen to have very different sounds to you as well. So I think it's almost about just trust your ears and trust the people around you that, you know, you actually, you know, look up to or aspire to be musically as well. They're the guys that are going to know a little bit more about tone. But that said, they have to be playing the same style of music as well. If they're playing, you know, heavier rock stuff and you're a blues or jazz guy, you know, do you really need to take that on board? Because two separate styles of music. So listen to those guys that will positively impact your playing and tone, and don't listen to the guys that, if you don't like their playing and you don't like their sound, don't even take it on board. Just don't listen to it. Trust your own gut and ears and just go for it and come up with something that's unique to you. That's another big part of it. All right, over the last few weeks, I've had a chance to demo and I was sent some really beautiful pedals from all over the world, and that's always fun. The thing that makes YouTube rewarding for me is being able to help like smaller companies get established on the net. And I helped with companies like Svsound, for example, and MP Audio, and a few others that I was the first to demo some of their products. And I'm always happy to do that as well. I've actually been the first to demo this. For those who are just listening to this podcast, it might be hard to see, but this pedal's called the Limbo Overdrive. It is awesome. I couldn't get a bad sound out of this to save myself. It sounds very amp-like, and you can actually change the negative and positive variable clipping voltage on the pedal, which basically these two controls at the top control kind of like the sag of the pedal. I guess that would be the way to explain it, and the bias of the pedal. So it's really sweet. You can get it to sound hotter and more crunchy, or more open and rounder sounding. And it's just a very, very unique pedal, and it was a pleasure to demo. The demo should be up soon. And yeah, it just looks and sounds great. So there's one pedal that I'm absolutely blown away by. The next one I was really, really impressed with is the MP Audio Two Faces pedal. This was the first demo that I really went, or the second demo that I went all out green screen on, and it came up really, really great. The sound of this thing is awesome. It's like an overdrive with the gain down, and more of a sort of nasty fuzz with the gain up. So it does both, which is pretty sweet. You don't often see that in pedals, that they do two separate things. So yeah, it's really unique. It's another great pedal. It's Australian made. These are the small companies that people need to know about, in my opinion. And not because they've just sent me stuff, but because they're actually good. I get sent a lot of stuff I'll never use again. And if I give them a shout out, I honestly think that they're off the planet, or they're really, really good at what they do. So the next one is the Fuzz GE from Bow Effects. Now, Bow Effects are from Boris in France. He makes some amazing pedals. They all look beautiful. I've got a set of three of these right now. I can't wait to start shooting these. I'm like counting down the days until I finish my job, so I can really get stuck into these pedal demos and do them justice unfatigued. So yeah, there's so many great and unique pedal companies that people don't know about. There's, I think part of the problem in the pedal industry is that it's flooded with companies, and it's flooded with pedals. So the trick is sometimes finding, you know, the gems amongst the mix and seeing what they have to offer, all that kind of stuff. And it's great when people, you know, from these pedal companies trust big YouTubers or larger YouTubers to do their product justice. And it's always a pleasure to do that. So I can't wait to find out more about Bow Effects when I get to test all of them. It should be a lot of fun. And if you know any great pedal companies that make some great stuff that not many people know about, or very few people, or that maybe they only make one or two pedals, but what they make is great, please let me know. You can leave your comments on YouTube or at inthebluespodcast.com, and I will take that on board and maybe see if I can contact them as well. So yeah, let me know your favorite pedal companies of the more obscure or unknown brands. I'd love to check them out because there's plenty of great stuff out there. All right, folks, I have to ask this question because I'm kind of sure this might happen. I know in other industries, say for video games, that when certain YouTubers do videos on, say, retro games, their prices go up. Now, this might be the case, might not be the case for guitar products, but I have a funny, funny feeling that the Mustang resale price is a lot higher than maybe what it should be, and I don't know if I'm to blame for that or what, but it's kind of cool to be, you know, at least in that niche and maybe have some sort of influence on, you know, how these prices go or what people think the amps are worth when they resell them. Same for maybe the Classic Vibe guitars as well. But the other thing I've noticed is the PV Bandit 112, you know, the red stripe one. I think they're a little bit higher up in price than when I first did my initial podcast a couple months back, when I was talking about why I went back to a PV Bandit. I picked mine up in totally beautiful condition, working condition, $160 Australian. So it was an absolute bargain. My friend then went and bought one from eBay the next day. He's great at that. Thanks, Khaled. And he picked it. He's up for $170, I think, delivered or somewhere like that. It was some insanely great price. So I've just been searching eBay, looking around, and they're over $200 always now. $270, $300 here. Another guy in Canada that sent me a video. I think it was Canada. I could be wrong. I apologize. I don't have his name in front of me right now, but he bought one and had to do some service on it, and he paid $150. Or was it $170? It was somewhere around there. Anyway, I can't remember the details exactly, but I have a funny, funny feeling that maybe the hype around certain products increases the resale price. But let me know what you think in the comments below. So my YouTube channel is officially 10 years old. I can't believe it. Time has absolutely flown. It's been an absolute joy to do, and it's been super cool. So firstly, thank you to everyone who has watched my channel over the years. I did open it in 2006, but I didn't really start doing anything gear related until about 2008. So 2 years of just random content. I was putting up stuff like, you know, when I was on vacation, just some fun clips of us playing pool or snooker, whatever you want to call it, all that kind of stuff. So yeah, there was just some random stuff, some surfing videos. And then I decided, why not? I'm going to throw up a demo of a Behringer TO800 pedal, which was one of the first demos that I did. It was either that or the Sparkle Drive, the Voodoo Lab Sparkle Drive. It was one or the other. Anyway, the first thing I noticed was, man, this has had like 1,000 views in the first week. I couldn't believe it. I thought maybe something was wrong. I just thought, oh, okay, I might be the only one who's done a demo on this. So I looked it up, and I was the only one that had a demo of that particular pedal at that particular time. So I thought, you know what? I want to go ahead and just demo all the gear that I've got at that time. And I remember buying and selling a lot of stuff over the first few years, like just to make demos, because no one else was doing it. I thought, this is really cool for people to see and how this stuff hears before they, you know, buy it online or however they want to buy it. They can just reference a video and sort of make a judgment call there. And that's still what I'm trying to do today as well. And this was long before, you know, I had a partner account, so there was no money to be made. It was literally still no money to be made, but this was literally before all of that stuff. So I was buying and selling a lot of stuff just with the intention of getting videos up so people could see how things sounded. And it was fun. It was like the audience maybe that I never had musically, you know, like it was just like, people are into this stuff. I get to play and have fun and show people how things sound, play with toys, and people can, you know, make their own judgment calls on if they like it or not. And I have taken the channel, obviously, in better directions since then. They used to be filmed in my bedroom with a pile of clothes on the bed and an unmade bed and no lighting and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, the more I got into it, the more I enjoyed it, and the more I'm always still striving to make things better and better. So around 2008 was when I first thought to myself, maybe I could do this and do it really well. And by the time 2011 came by, I was like, this is what I want to do. You know, this is the point where I had a deadline of leaving work and all this kind of stuff and just focusing on doing videos. So I got there in the end, although, you know, I have been working recently, but I had 2 years where I was just doing what I loved. And I'm not paid by companies or anything like that. I do the videos the same way I've always done them. Things might change down the line just to make life a little bit more sustainable. But yeah, I kind of pride myself on not being like a paid promoter of any of this stuff. And yeah, people seem to enjoy it, and it continually grows. And I've taken a lot of negative and constructive criticism on over the years to make things better. And it's one thing just to be shooting videos all the time, like making pedal demos or whatever. I think to have a really popular or successful YouTube channel, not that mine's as successful as many others, but it comes down to being yourself and having a little bit of a diverse content in your uploads as well. You know, the Mustang Mondays, the Less Stack videos are just two that come to mind of things that, you know, I've tried to do first, or have themed videos that I take inspiration from other channels. And usually when I do things like the podcast, it wasn't that I saw another guitar channel do a podcast. It was a totally different genre where I got the idea, maybe I can do this. I like radio. I like being able to talk, and I'm comfortable in front of the camera, all that kind of stuff. So maybe I can do a podcast that sort of breaks up the normal gear demos. Maybe might tap into a different audience, all that kind of stuff. So I think it's good to take inspiration from other channels that are outside the niche, because that's where things will really take off, at least for me anyway. I know, you know, I look up to some really big channels that are in a totally different niche on YouTube, and I think, man, this is something that I could do on my channel that might work and might have an audience for. It's been a continual learning experience, there's no doubt about that, and I absolutely love it. I hope YouTube's around in the next 10 years, because by then, man, maybe I'll have 1 million subscribers. Who knows? But I doubt it'll get there, but yeah, it'll be fun. And that said too, I've got some other videos that I want to be working on pretty soon, that I'm going to keep to myself right now, but they will hopefully be funny. So we'll see how we go. But thanks again for everyone who has supported the channel over the years. I can't believe it's been 10 years since I started it. And if you were wondering where the In the Blues name came from, it was actually the name of my trio at one point, the In the Blues Trio. I planned on uploading band clips of the trio to YouTube, which I did. There's a couple of old school ones on there. But yeah, in the end, I just thought In the Blues is a cool name for a channel. So I kind of fluked it. And I had a friend of mine design the logo based around, you know, the Buddy Guys Legends kind of logo. I liked the look of his logo. And I thought, I want a circle with a guitar and, you know, whatever else. So yeah, there was, it's definitely continually growing. It's always growing in better and new directions as well. So that's my plan. And yeah, just want to thank everybody for that. I can't believe it's 10 years, man. Where's the time gone? Thanks for listening. My name's Shane. If you have any comments or questions, you can leave them at intheblues@podcast.com, or you can email me at intheblues@outlook.com. Don't forget, my forum is at intheblues.net as well. It's a great community of people over there talking about everything guitars, guitar lessons, amps, your pedals, all that kind of stuff. So if you have trouble getting through to me, there's generally someone who knows a whole lot more on the forum as well. But thanks again for all your support. I absolutely appreciate it. I can't believe the YouTube channel is 10 years old. I never thought I'd be sitting here talking into a microphone, talking about the channel and gear. That's crazy. So things have come a long way, and I absolutely appreciate everybody who's been a part of it. It's generally been just a great experience. So thanks again, folks, and I'll catch you all very, very soon. Cheers.